Zach, welcome in. You probably didn't hear the beginning part of the program, but I'm redoing Smokey and the Bandit, and I'm going to do a remake of it. And apparently GM already has like a, they already have like a Pontiac's done, obviously. They don't make Pontiacs anymore, but apparently they can just put an emblem on it. And I mean, so we're all set from the car standpoint. I cast John Goodman as Buford T. Justice. Right now I'm leaning McConaughey in the role of the Bandit, but I think he could be a little too cheeky, so I could be swayed on that. We've got one of the Wilson brothers as the Snowman. We've got Will Ferrell as Big Enos Burdett. And right now I'm leaning Kate Hudson in the Sally Field character. How do you feel about that? Is that something I could interest you in?
Are we filming downtown Hudson?
Yeah, of course. And then, oh, great. And we can take, if the whole premise is, instead of the Coors, we're going to smuggle Pappy Van Winkle out of Kentucky into Summit County. Can I interest you in that?
Man, listen, I will never doubt you, Bo, on anything. So, congratulations on the new chance, too.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we'll be doing it. I'm still going to be around. We're going to be talking to you. Nothing really changes. How many floats have you been on yet this year?
Just one. Just last Sunday, just to kind of, you know, get the kinks out.
Okay.
Stretch out these old white pasty legs and, you know, see the new sights and sounds.
How'd it go? Nice. Was it a nice maiden voyage?
Yeah, it was. It was very quiet, very low key. I think that, you know, in 2 weekends or so, that'll change. But it was very, very low key and very relaxing. And the Cavs played that night. So
right.
There won't be any floating tomorrow because there's basketball.
How about
that? Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, yeah. I got to deal with this game at 3:30. I got mother-in-law stuff I got to deal with. I've got Mother's Day for my own wife I got going on. This is not ideal. I mean, I was hoping it would be a Tuesday kick time. So this 3:30 Sunday afternoon, I'm not a fan of this. There's a lot of things that are in your wheelhouse, and I want to get to the Brown stuff in a second. But you cannot have a conversation, it appears, about, and I think it's justified. I don't think it's just clickbait and nonsense, but because it's hanging over this season, and even LeBron's teammates acknowledge it, everybody acknowledge it. Windhorst has kind of flipped this week a little bit and said, where is a potential landing space? Like the one thing that could really help Cleveland is the fact that where else is he going to go? And I think that's been I think this whole thing has been a detriment to the actual juice that goes into the games. All the while, this guy in season 15 at age 33 is playing a game that I said earlier in the show, Zach, it reminded me of Jordan against Drexler in, I think, 91 or 2, when he just decided to shoot threes to prove a point. That's kind of what LeBron's doing right now. He's so great that he's kind of just messing around in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And eviscerating people.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be at the lottery on Tuesday night.
Okay.
So, because our normal Cavs people are covering the Cavs. So, and I was thinking, Bo, like, think about 15 lotteries ago. And LeBron was, what, 210 pounds?
Yeah.
And all smiles, you know? And it was like, man, this kid's got a chance. And I thought he would be an NBA All-Star, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't think he would be in the discussion for greatest of all time. And to be cementing that or to be raising that argument in year 15, doing things at an unprecedented level. You know, he thrives on the drama. I think he likes the uncertainty to an extent. But he lives for this moment, and everybody gets all worked up all regular season long. And then it's like, well, eventually he's not going to be able to play like this. Well, sure.
Yeah.
But right now he is the best there is, and it has just been an absolute pleasure to watch over these last few weeks.
You've only watched him forever. I mean, this is a guy you followed. You've followed him since high school.
We're going on 20 years.
20 years of knowing this.
Here's my best story. So I was at OU as a student, but I still worked for a couple of local weekly newspapers up on the home front. And St. Vincent St. Mary was playing a playoff football game, and I came home for the weekend to make $50 or whatever to cover this game. And he had just been added to the varsity roster and, like, literally written in, you know, in ink on what was probably a little better than a typewriter at the time. I mean, the year was probably 1999.
Yeah.
Right? But it was LeBaron James. And he didn't have a catch in the game, but they threw it to him a few times, and he was 6'5", all legs, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like LeBaron James. And there was whispers around town, hey, you know, they have this basketball class coming. But, you know, nobody thought. And as we know now, it was like Bob Huggins came to see him and said, why would you waste my time? And the coaches were like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm not getting this kid. This kid's going to the NBA. And then really over the 18 months that followed, it took off. And then 15 years later, here we are. And it's been a treat.
What do you think? No, nobody really knows. I mean, what, anything about what motivates him? What do you think motivates him at this age? I've always had this, I've had this theory, kind of this running theory this year, that one thing that was very important to him was to play at an NBA MVP level. To play, I think playing every game mattered to him, and I think playing the way he's playing in the playoffs mattered to him, so that if he does decide to go somewhere else, he can leave with a clear conscience, so that there's not this notion of you didn't give it your all like there was the last time when we threw the jersey and all that stuff. I think he's cognizant of those things. But what do you think motivates him at this point?
Yeah, I could buy that. You know, I think we'd have to go much past the time we have there, but you know, I think he loves not being the MVP because I think that that motivates him. I think little slights motivate him, and then I think big picture motivates him. Like when you put these numbers that he's posting in the postseason against anybody, including the one or two or three guys that he's compared to on the grandest of scales, I mean, he's surpassing them. And then you match it to things he did 8 years ago and 6 years ago and 4 years ago. And the wins keep coming. I mean, he's at over 50 playoff wins with this core group of, you know, Tristan and JR and loving these guys. And it's amazing. So, you know, one day we might say the reason he didn't win more titles is because Kevin Durant went to the Warriors.
Yeah.
But the numbers are just unreal. And the numbers don't even account for the passing, the presence, just the playing of four positions, all of those things that he does so effortlessly.
It doesn't have to be more than that. From what I mean by that, you mentioned the Durant thing. When I said this when they signed him, and this wasn't an original thought, but I remember saying it a lot on the radio. Look, they were up 3-1. They won 73 games, and they had the second-best player on the planet. There's not a counterplay for that. Like, right. That was kind of finite. And, you know, so it's kind of just bad timing in that sense, in that they were able to create a super team. And, you know, unfortunately for LeBron, he's probably not going to be able to rack up a few. I mean, it looks like Klay Thompson's going to re-sign there. I mean, they're going to keep the band together there, and they're all still in their prime. So, I mean, this could go on for a while there in Golden State. We were going to have you on last week, and you were covering Brown's rookie minicamp. What did you come away with? Specifically, obviously, the quarterback.
No, it's not. It just happened to happen sometimes. You know, for us, we just trying to get better
and
figure out what the main thing is, and that's how we can continue to help each other improve
every
day.
These guys, they get overwhelmed. They get in Thursday, and they're immediately doing paperwork, doing photo shoots, having meetings, getting this new coaches screaming in their face and new terminology and all that stuff. So, you know, I'm optimistic about the Browns on some levels. The roster is a bunch better. You know, I think John Dorsey knows what he's doing, and he trusts in these guys. I think there's specific roles for them, and although I'm not sure, you know, where they're going to be this rookie class in September, Bo, it's not about, you know, game one, snap one for any of these guys, because this is not a one-year fix for the Browns. So, you know, I think the cautious optimism is warranted. I think the excitement is warranted. We'll see what happens. You know, the first impression is the Baker is tiny. That's I thought that in Mobile when I saw him. I thought that in Indy when I saw him, and yet was still struck me last week when I watched him walk to the podium in Berea. So
it's one of those things you just can't. I'm with you. It's one of those things I can't unsee.
It doesn't mean that he'll fail.
Right. It, no, doesn't, it doesn't. But it's just a different way.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, we'll see. It's going to take these guys time because everything's so new, including the play caller. You know, most teams that have quarterback questions don't win, and there's multiple reasons they have quarterback questions. But, you know, I'm fairly confident it's not going to be another one-win situation or a total disaster, because I just think the roster is much better. And if they gel and if things go their way, I think they could be competitive, which I think is Dorsey's ultimate goal. And then, you know, my timeline is a year from now, we're talking about a Browns team that then contends for the playoffs, that then we can see real strengths and weaknesses. Right now, it's all guessing because they just have been so terrible and they're so new.
How did you get talked into going on a bike ride on the towpath?
You're better than
that. You know,
gosh,
I mean, you know who you are. I mean, it's like Kenny Banya telling Jerry, do you lift? And Jerry goes, why?
Well, let me tell you this, because if I go on the bike ride on the towpath, not only do I get Winking Lizard out of it,
but
it keeps me away from the golf course, which keeps me away from the beer, which keeps me away from other trouble before 5 p.m. So it's just like, you know, I'm not a math major by any means, but I just kind of looking at, I don't really have anything to do this weekend, so let's at least break a sweat on something other than jalapenos on my sandwich.
So I got to tell you, I'll show you this real quick. I had to go on that ridiculous train to the North Pole thing that they do to Enson Peninsula?
It just went by me. It just went by me like 5 seconds ago.
Right. Yes. So I did it this winter with my kids. So we get, so we live right there, right? And so we go, we frequent the Weeping Lizard. So we're landing at the quote, the North Pole. And my 4-year old goes, "Dad, this isn't the North Pole. It's a Weeping Lizard." And I went, "You got us." And then he got mad. He goes, "Dad, they're not real elves. They're not even small." So, yeah, it's a problem. But I, you know, I endorse it. All right, buddy, that's sound reasoning.
I'm not surprised that your kids are highly intelligent.
Well, I
just want to say, you know, from all of us who do this to an extent, it's a loss for the Cleveland radio community. However, I just feel like you're Kyrie. Like, nobody wanted to lose your talent, but the ego just got to be too much.
So ego got to be too much. That's a good one. We should save that as a rejoin. Thanks, buddy. We'll see you around.
Thanks, Bo.
All right, Zach Jackson, The Athletic, one of our favorites.